Message for you.
You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Look, I'm no beer expert, but I do play one on podcasts. And that's why you should trust me, and that Oscar Blues Brewing Company is one of the best beers out there, the original people to put craft beer in a can with their Dale's Pale Ale, which, by the way, is also delicious, so, you know, convenient to support that. And they've got all kinds of flavors, 4 different locations, 2 in Colorado, 1 in Austin, 1 in North Carolina. Delicious beers, big supporter of OneOfUs.net, well worth going out of your way to go to the breweries and check it out, where you can get lots of seasonals not available elsewhere, as well as their homemade sodas. Oh my god, they're so good. And just buy them in the store, because you can find their cans all over the place. So delicious. Also, please, if you're not already a subscriber, I mean, come on, as little as $2 a month, $5 a month, or if you want to go up to 10 or 25 as well, there's different perks at every single level where you get lots of bonus stuff inside of the forums of extra podcasts and videos and all sorts of stuff that we do. It is the only reason we're able to keep going. Also, think about liking us on all our various different social media, especially our YouTube page. We'd love to get more likes on there. That does make a difference because we do get ad revenue from those things. So please, if you go on there and subscribe to our YouTube page, that makes a difference as well. It is day 2 recording of Fantastic Fest. We are so excited to be here in Austin, Texas. I'm Chris Cox, representing OneOfUs.net, and with me is...
Jenny Nolf, representing Austin Chronicle.
Even though it's funny, it's been a long time since we actually recorded a podcast together, but we used to regularly do this.
Yes, that's actually true.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
You're still on our list of reviewers on OneOfUs.net.
Oh, I love it.
you're always welcome back.
Okay.
But we have a bunch of movies to talk about, a bunch of different people to talk about movies with on the podcast today. So it'll be there'll be a little bit of change in terms of ambient noise here and there. At one point, we made the mistake of recording when there was a karaoke thing going on in the next room. I did the best I could to at least wait till they were done singing Journey before we got started recording.
Well, that's always a good idea.
Indeed. But we've both seen a lot of movies, but I thought we'd start off with one of the films that, at least for me, was one of the more anticipated movies of the festival, which is You Might Be the Killer, previously called Dead Counselors, which I thought was like... I was talking to Luke Mullen, who's one of the programs of the festival, and he was like... I like Dead Counselors better. And I was like, I don't, because it's just so straightforward. It was like, yeah.
Yeah, actually, that title just seems more like it could get lost online, but You Might Be the Killer is a little bit more ambiguous and kind of fun.
It's an odd question for a title where you go, what in the hell is that movie about?
Yes, it grabbed me. Dead Counselors would never grab me.
As it is, it turns out that this title is indeed pretty on the nose, too, but it's such an interesting premise. The reason this was one of my most anticipated is because I'm a big fan of the horror comedy, meta horror comedy like Tucker and Dale versus Evil and what have you, The Final Girls.
Or Cabin in the Woods.
Or Cabin in the Woods. And this stars two Joss Whedon alumni, Fran Kranz and Allison Hannigan. It really almost feels like Drew Goddard was involved in making this thing, but he was not.
I can see that.
But it was directed by Brett Simmons. Do you want to talk about the premise of the film?
Yeah. So the premise of the film is this camp counselor who's kind of like the leader in charge calls one of his best friends, and he is freaking out because 1,000 camp counselors are dead already. And I say 1,000 because it says a lot at the beginning. It doesn't actually have a number, which I think is very funny. And they kind of go through the process on the phone, and I don't know how much I should give away.
Well, I mean,
because it's all first act stuff.
Yeah, it's complicated because I feel like I love the fact that I discovered the big surprise that the title is intrinsic to, like, naturally. But at the same time, it's hard to really sell what makes this movie so special without it. So we'll just say
that, spoiler warning,
that question is really, like, is the key funny moment early on that ends up being the premise of the whole film, which is, without going too deep into it, if you think you might be the killer of all these counselors in this camp, you know, meaning our protagonist, Fran Kranz, and how in the world would that have even happened? I mean, he's clearly the nicest guy in the whole world.
right? Right. He's Fran Kranz. Is he capable of playing any other part?
I don't know. He plays a pretty good stoner in Cabin in the Woods.
But he's still the nicest guy in the whole group of kids.
Also true.
Yeah, so just say. Yeah, he's not a stoner so much here that we get to see. Mm-hmm. But the story is told non-linearly as he's talking to the phone with Allison Hannigan, who runs a comic book store, who's the horror expert. And she's sort of running him back through everything that happens as he starts to sort of recall more. And I love that it's so smart so the audience knows with a movie that's so chopped up in time exactly where you are in the story by a big red number on the screen every time it goes to the flashback of how many counselors are dead at this point.
Yeah.
And you're right. Sometimes it's just a lot.
I liked how in the beginning it said a lot. I kind of wish towards the end because they eventually literally like kind of go back and through all the camp counselors, and I wish that it went from like 9 to a lot instead of 9 to 10 or something like that at one point. That would have been so much fun.
And it goes through, there's a lot of little on-screen jokes, there's a lot of meta jokes. I mean, I love she at one point's like, oh, he's like, what did the killer look like? Was he ugly? It's like, yeah, he was really ugly. It's like, yeah, was he like Jason Voorhees ugly, or what would you say? The guy from Maniac Cop ugly. It's like deep cut references for horror fans. But I think this is one of those movies that even if you're a light horror fan, you're familiar with the conceit of a killer at a summer camp killing off counselors, which I presume most people are.
Yeah, like it's very Friday the 13th, which I thought was kind of fun that they listed a bunch of iconic slashers and they never say Friday the 13th in that list, which I thought was smart.
Yeah, that's
because it's clearly this what
almost too obvious.
Yeah.
And be warned, this is, unlike some horror comedies, this is actually gets pretty gory at points. There's definitely some splatstick going on here and there. But I like the way they shook up sort of the camp counselor relationships. There's a lot of sort of like in-jokes, like the one guy they keep calling, it's Steve, the kayak king. And he's like, it's canoes. Canoes, not kayaks, but no one can ever get it right. And later when you can hear the killer's voice in his head, you know, doing very Jason Voorhees, like, Steve, the kayak king.
Also, I didn't realize until yesterday when I was telling someone about the movie, because I really liked the kayaking joke the most. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that when you say it really fast, it just is kayaking.
Right, right.
And I was like, oh man, it's layered.
This is the one film I actually watched twice. I went back and saw it again. I liked it so much.
I know, I read online. I was like, wow, that one must be good. And that's the first one I chose to watch.
So would you call this one of your favorites of the fest too?
Negative. I'm a monster. I'm very picky. I liked the first act a lot. I thought it was funny, but I feel like this would have been a better shorter film, if that makes sense. Okay. But I did enjoy it. And then there wasn't like a dull moment, I will say. It's really fun. And I think a lot of it has to do with the actors that are involved who are just like having the time of their lives.
Oh, yeah, you can tell how much fun they're having.
Yeah.
I love the element as well. One of the characters is his, like, the sexy girl on camp is, of all people, Fran Kranz's ex-girlfriend, which is a little difficult to swallow because he's such a nebbishy little nerd guy, and she's just this knockout model sort, and you're like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, basically. She's, like, the prettiest one.
But everybody, like, even when they do introduce each one, you, like, you know who each one is in archetype-wise for a camp slasher film.
Yeah, which is pretty good. I would say, again, I'm a monster, but I would put it on the same level as The Final Girls. So if you liked that movie a lot, you will probably like this movie about the same a lot.
Which I did too. I'm a big fan of the just meta horror comedy stuff. But let's talk about another film. I didn't get to see this, but every single person I have talked to who has seen this film In Fabric has been like, oh, dude, you have to see this movie. And that is In Fabric by director Peter Strickland. Somebody's like, all I'm going to tell you is, Haunted Dress.
Murder Dress. That is what I've been, like, I was, like, almost cheering in my head when I saw this at midnight on Thursday. I was like, Murder Dress. So, In Fabric, and if you've seen The Duke of Burgundy or Barbarian Sound Studio, you know that he kind of, and I always butcher this word, the Italian word for horror.
Giallo?
Giallo. Because I'm terrible at Italian, and I just look at it, and I'm just like, oh. I always want to say Giallo. I don't know why. But so Giallo, so he like is kind of, all of his work is like kind of steeped in that and kind of like inspired by that. And this one, like right away when I got out of it, I was like, this is like a B movie wrapped in an art house film, but overall it's like a wacky comedy. The dialogue is wonderful. It's about this It's about this woman who's looking for a dress for a date. She has just gotten out of a divorce, and she goes to this department store sale. And it's the people in this department store all look like they came out of The Witches from Roald Dahl. Like, they're wearing these, like, 1800s, like, gothic kind of get-ups, Victorian-style dresses. The woman, Fatma, I don't remember her last name, but she was in The Duke of Burgundy and Barbarian Sound Studio as well. Like, spouts gibberish, and, like, she's making the sale of her lifetime for this, like, beautiful red dress, which is, like, this silk, almost, like, it's the color of blood. It has this, like, wonderful peacock feather. It's a size 36, which is, like, a really small size, I'm assuming, in the UK. The woman who tries it on is like, I'm not a size 36. And she's like, oh, but it fits you perfectly. So immediately, you know, this dress is, like, up to no good.
you would be suspicious. She'd be like, despite the fact how pleased I am I can fit into this dress, something is a little off.
Yeah, exactly. It's so wacko. And when you think you're not, because it's kind of split into two parts. So when you think you're not going to be into the second part, it pulls you immediately back in and ties in things from the first part that you didn't expect to reappear. It's probably my favorite so far. One of them. It would say this one and Burning are, like, two of my favorites of the festival right now.
I didn't get to see Burning, but I did get to shake the star Steven Yeun's hand and say, thank you for Mayhem. That's one of my favorite horror comedies.
Oh, he likes that movie a lot, too.
Yeah, he was like, thank you so much. Joe Lynch is a genius.
He's also a very attractive Steven Yeun.
I can say that
that
is true.
It is very true.
He shook my hand and my back leg lifted up.
It was like magic. But yeah, I totally recommend In Fabric. A24 picked it up at TIFF. So it's definitely going to have a release date, I'm assuming early next year. Mm-hmm. Or maybe mid next year. It's just so bizarre that I don't want to give away too many things. But this dress, like, in its wake, like, one of the things I thought was funny is that it, like, destroys washing machines.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's, and Gwendolyn,
because it's like, you're supposed to get me dry cleaned.
Yeah, exactly. The dress knows exactly how you should take care of it.
Indeed.
The girl who plays, oh my God, why am I, she's in Star Wars, she's in Game of Thrones, Gwendolyn.
Christy
is in this movie, and she plays a girl named Gwen, which I thought was really funny and kind of meta. It took me forever to recognize her. Because they don't really emphasize her height in the movie. Like, she's kind of big, but they don't, like, show how, like, much taller she is than the rest of the cast. Because, I mean, she's, like, a goddess on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just one scene where she's, like, leaning on a bathroom door. And I was like, oh, my God. I know who that is. So that's kind of a nice surprise. A lot of these actors are very recognizable from either TV or film. And it's just a movie that's having so much fun with itself.
Right on. You made me even more excited to see this movie.
Yeah.
That's In Fabric, guys. I think this is one that everybody's going to have a chance to see. It sounds like it's going to get up with A24, who kind of the rock stars right now of, like, art house, like, genre cinema. It seems like you're going to get a chance to see this one.
Yeah. Hopefully they do really well for horror movies. And this is, like, a horror comedy. So I would not miss it. And I would try not to read as much on it at first. Mainly because I think it has a lot of stuff going. But you should read my review, obviously, at Austin Chronicle. But it has a lot going on with it that should be kept under wraps, I think.
Indeed.
Austin, under dress wraps.
Under dress
wraps. What?
I see what you did there. You too are meta. You said that your top two were this and Burning. Do you, like, have any others that you've seen that you just, like, okay, this is also in the top tier of films you've seen at Fantastic Fest? You just want to throw out the names real quick.
Surprisingly, Halloween.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I was shocked that I liked it as much as I did, because, you know, it could have gone one or two ways. I've seen the other remake of Halloween, and this isn't a remake, it's a direct sequel, but I was surprised by how much I liked it. I thought the sound editing was top-notch, and if the sound editing, like, wins me over in a movie, I tend to, like, fall in love.
Baron, no wonder you like Barbarians. That sounds good.
Yeah. sound editing is my, like,
sound
favorite
editing
thing.
The movie. But stay tuned, and we've got a lot more reviews coming up on this very podcast. So what we're going to talk about now is a little movie, well, literally a little movie called One Cut of the Dead. And I say little. It was made for $27,000.
Wow.
Where it opened in an 84-seat Tokyo Art House Theater for a 6-day run in November last year. And before you knew it, it had expanded to 400 theaters where it went on to make, I think it's at like, it went on for like 20 million or something, and still, it's still climbing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The guy that introduced the film mentioned that it's been sold out pretty much in every single theater since it opened, and they've done no marketing for the film.
I have a friend of mine in Japan, Toshi. Some of you might know him as Nakato, who follow us on oneofus.net, but he's been telling me about this movie for months. He's like, when this comes, you have to see it. And here we are at Fantastic Fest, and it's finally played here, directed by Shinichiro Ueda.
Yeah, I could be saying that wrong. Sounds great.
Best guess.
Yeah.
But this little movie, it's one of those ones that I always feel like I have to warn people before they see it. Yes, it is a zombie film. Yes, it is a zom-com, as it were, a zombie comedy. You'll be watching the first 37 minutes of this movie, which is a one-take, very low-budget, like, very awkward zombie film with a bunch of people on a set filming a zombie movie, but then real zombies show up and going, why is everyone telling me to see this movie?
I had the exact same journey.
You're really amateurish and not very good. And then something happens.
And then the second chapter hits.
Yeah. Where everything goes from that to, you know, I almost don't want to say, okay, guys, if you want to, like you say, I don't want to know, here's your chance to bail out. But for those who do want to know, yes, it goes to, now let's see what was going on with this film, which was made for a TV station. And the idea is, yeah, we're going to do a one cut thing. And it's going to be live at the same time. And we watched the making of it, how it all came together, and then why it was so awkward and uncomfortable the whole time. Because all these scenes that you're like, wow, that was lame, there was a reason it was lame.
Yeah, it's like a behind the scenes.
The moment I knew something was up was when the woman popped back up, and I was like, oh, wait a second, I've seen something like this on a telenovela one time, and it was a live broadcast, and I was like, I think I know what they're going to do. And then, sure enough, like 5 minutes later, they turn around and you go on a journey of actually, by the end of this film, you will root for the film you did not like in the beginning.
Very true.
And it's amazing.
I think anyone who's ever been worked on films will totally get where this movie's humor is coming from. Yes. But I don't think you have to either. I think it's just Fantastic Fest in particular is a very perfect audience for this movie because so many of the people here haven't back worked on movies.
It's the story of a man who takes a project that he knows he is not qualified to do. Even his quote is, I'm fast and cheap, but I'm average. Like, and that's his selling point. He knows this is way too much for him, but he wants to impress his daughter and get closer with her. And then it's about him rising to the occasion and then kind of going slightly mad, and you're kind of with him the whole time. I have almost no bad things to say about this movie, except for that you do have to, like, struggle through the first 30 minutes, but all of that is totally worth it by the end. They pay everything off in that first 30 minutes. Every little thing that doesn't make sense has a reason behind it, and it's hilarious.
And then you can go back and watch that first 30 minutes again and love it. Like, yeah. And then you're like, oh, that was amazing. I don't know why I hated that.
By the way, I am Chris Cox from oneofus.net. Joining me is Nick Thies from the UGO podcast, or Unapologetic Geek Out, and also from That's My Entertainment.
Oh, yes. I'm covering the event here for That's My E or That's My Entertainment. They were nice enough to send me here, and I'll be doing New York Comic Con soon, so I'm going to be really busy this month, but man, I'm having a fun Fantastic Fest. It's my first time here.
It is indeed a really amazing time. You also do Pod Against Evil with our lady patients here.
Yes, I do guest on Pod Against Evil.
Pod Against Evil podcast.
Yes, indeed. Are you fantastic? And Netflix and Kills.
Oh, yes, we also do Netflix and Kills together.
So what do you, I know you guys are both big horror nuts, how do you think this stood up against other meta horror?
As far as, like, the higher echelon, like Tucker Dale versus Evil and The Final Girls, which I feel are, or even The Cabin in the Woods, up there.
Yeah.
It makes it for me. Like, that final shot when they're all trying to, oh, I don't know what I'm
talking about. Yeah, don't sign you on the spoilers,
like,
but
the final shot of it makes you raise your fists in the air and go, fuck yes. And I think that's where it was for me. It was like, this reaches like Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale level for me.
Absolutely. I didn't know anything about the movie going into it. All I knew was like, it was a zombie film. That's all I knew. A Japanese zombie film. And then that third act, like, seriously, I was laughing so hard, like, my stomach hurts right now. Like, I was crying.
The whole screening was because we're all, like, I imagine there's so many people in there that are involved in the industry as well. So I'm sure it plays to them as well. Especially the industry people behind the scenes that are like, oh, okay, that was a weird shot. Like, some of them are on their phones, barely paying attention, and you just know that was people from a studio, like, studio execs. Some writer in there was like,
"This is what I would call a must-see midnight movie, and definitely one that, even after such a successful play in Japan, I strongly suspect is going to become kind of a hit here and in Europe as well."
What I liked about it was that it is a meta horror, but it's a different take on a meta horror. Mm-hmm. It's definitely like a film industry meta horror. So, and anyone who's ever been involved in film is going to think it's absolutely amazing. Even if you're not, you're going to think it's amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So, Patience and I were one of our most anticipated films for this particular film festival was Apostle, which is the new film by Gareth Evans. Now, if that name makes you go, and I'm supposed to be impressed, you have not watched the right movies in your life.
Right.
He did two films that are, I would argue, are considered the ultimate masterpieces.
The echelon.
Of brutal martial arts cinema. The Raid and The Raid 2. If you've not seen this, by all means you should. But I feel like he really surprised with this new film. The first time he's working with an international cast here, with Dan Stevens from shows such as, things such as Legion and Beauty and the Beast, coming in to play his lead character in a film that is not a martial arts extravaganza. But we kept arguing he brought what he brought to martial arts films with the Raid films, he brought to British folk horror films like The Wicker Man. With this, which is to say, oh yeah, it's still really violent and brutal, but at the same time, exquisitely shot.
This is really a beautiful period piece. I mean, I would even hesitate to call it, you know, a horror film. I mean, it's just a gorgeous period piece film. It's, like you said, beautifully shot. There are some horrific moments, but I think that this is just a damn good film. I think that this will appeal to a lot of different kinds of people. This is not just a horror genre film.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, although I still would call it a horror film.
I mean, it has horrific elements, but it's, I mean, a horror light, maybe. It's a little bit more mainstream, I think, than...
Well, it's as you said, a period piece. It's 1905. Dan Stevens plays Thomas Richardson, who is, when we see him, looks kind of rough. And he's being told that basically his sister has been held, is being held prisoner by a cult on a strange island. And they're demanding a ransom. And they send him out to go undercover cult member and to rescue her. And the first third of this film, the first act, if you will, is kind of just that. We're watching him be pretty damn clever about avoiding being detected and convincing this cult led by the wonderful Michael Sheen as Prophet Malcolm, managing to even though doing his job, investigating, while at the same time seemingly having a bit of an addiction to laudanum.
just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit. But you know, trying to figure out where is she is the most important thing. I whether it's rescue her or at the very least make sure she's alive and that you can, you know, even if we have to pay the ransom, just make sure they're not just going to take the money and then kill her. And as things develop, he starts to have a friendship with the daughter of Michael Sheen, played by Lucy Boynton, who is, like a lot of the rest of the people in this island cult, not entirely clear what's going on behind the scenes, as well as with a young, very adorable, we want to be a couple, but we're not allowed to, some major subplot here, and two other guys who are tentatively the leaders of this group as well.
The founders of the island/cult village.
Yes. This one does not turn out that the whole thing is actually a Renaissance festival, though.
this movie did give me a lot of, speaking of The Village, it did give me a lot of The Village from, was it M. Night Shyamalan meets Wicker Man, not the Nick Cage Wicker Man, the good Wicker Man.
The good one, yeah.
And I mean, it definitely is kind of a mashup of those two different things. I really, really liked this film. And then it has that nice, let's say, Gareth Evans twist to it, you know, has that nice little, like, just enough like violence and gore to keep me interested. For
and
sure.
As we said, it does get pretty brutal mm-hmm. at points.
Yeah.
But that's not the main point of the film. And there is indeed a very strong supernatural element.
Yes.
To this. It's not one of those ones where, well, you never really know. No, they decidedly tell you what is the background, and as it gives hints as the film goes on as to what is actually going on with mm-hmm. these people. What do they believe in? It gets creepier.
Yeah,
and
it
weirder.
Gets really creepy. But I like how they didn't. I mean, a lot of movies that I like kind of leave you guessing, and I think that's okay. This one doesn't leave you guessing, and I think that's also okay. So I did like it, and I liked how it wrapped up.
I will say that it's one of the big stars of this film is the just gorgeous cinematography by Matt Flannery working mm-hmm. with Gareth Evans. We saw, especially in The Raid 2, when he really, Evans stepped up his game in a major level. You're like, wow, this is one of the most beautifully shot films I've seen
yeah.
this year, and yet it's a brutal martial arts film. This is, indeed, has so many shots. I was like, God, that was just
perfect. I mean, he really matches the scenery well with the tone of the film. And it's, I mean, there's just shots where you're just like, wow, breathtaking.
And as well, the gentlemen who did the music for this were actually Indonesian composers who he'd worked with on previous films. He was like, how do we make them come in and do a British folk horror movie set in 1905? But they nailed it. It adds so much to the creepy atmosphere and ambiance of this. I have a feeling this is a movie I'm going to return to quite a few more times, and that's going to be easy to do, fortunately, because
it's on Netflix.
It's going to be on Netflix.
In like 2 weeks.
Yep, and I highly recommend that you see it, although if you do get a chance to see a theatrical release somewhere, this is the kind of movie I'd say, well worth.
It's too pretty to not see on a big screen.
Hey, so we are going to talk about a movie that's playing this year at Fantastic Fest, The Unthinkable. I'm here with Patience.
Yay!
Who works for oneofus.net, and she works for, what you do, Stand Against Evil podcast, right?
I do the Pod Against Evil occasionally. Netflix and Kill, I'm a regular on, for UGO.
For let's go with the full name there.
Unapologetic Geek Out.
There you go.
Podcast network. But mostly I'm the oneofus.net shill. Paid corporate shill.
She is our secret weapon. But yeah, this movie is a Swedish disaster movie, which is not something I thought was a thing until the Wave.
The Wave,
a
which
few years ago.
I love The Wave.
But this is like a, not connected to that, although there is a sequel to The Wave.
The Quake. It's playing tonight, as a matter of fact.
Indeed it is. I am not going to be seeing it this
time. Me either, but I will see it eventually.
But tell me a little bit, what is The Unthinkable about? How is it a disaster movie?
Basically, there's like a weird virus in the rain that gives people Alzheimer's.
Oh.
So basically, after about being 15 minutes in the rain, you forget everything about yourself. You forget who you are. And so this obviously takes place in Sweden.
Where
it rains a lot. And it's the story of this one man who's a piano prodigy and his quest to sort of redeem himself. He's estranged from his family, from his ex-girlfriend. He's a famous musician, and he has some definitely like deeper, darker familial issues. And so it's actually kind of more of a drama and like a family drama that takes place during an apocalyptic episode.
So is this the sort of thing that like, are we seeing people go crazy and start to like attack each other because they don't know who they are, where they are?
Yeah. Well, it's more along the lines that does happen, but it's more along the lines of people in cars, like just crashing into each other because I don't know if they forgot to how to drive or
they're in cars. How did they get affected by the rain?
I know. Right. I mean, we're not talking like logic here, Chris.
It's interesting because there was a European series about the rain being a sort of apocalyptic event as well. You were talking about having seen that.
Yeah, it was. Oh, I can't think of it off the top of my head. Right. And there was also a really cool short that's showing here at Fantastic Fest called Acid, which is about acid rain, and that's
pretty brutal.
Amazing. in my view,
Patience, who I love dearly, has this hysterical habit in a movie. and something really violent and gory happens, she laughs like this. She goes, not like that. She goes,
I don't laugh like that. That's not true.
She's just 2 inches from being a serial killer.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge.
One of the things about this movie, and I had the pleasure of I chose a random seat in the very back. I like to sit in the back of the theater, and it just so happened that all of the directors were sitting next to me. And this movie has 5 directors, which is insane. And they're kind of a collective, like a co-op of directors, I guess you could say. And you can, that was, if I had one criticism about this movie, is you can tell that there is 5 directors because it has 5 different voices. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't know that, I would be like, wow, this director has like ADD or something, ADHD maybe, because it's like, it definitely changes. There's definitely like 5 different voices. And I think that's really apparent. But overall, I thought it was like a darn good post-apocalyptic film. And post-apocalyptic films are my jam.
Yes, they are.
I love post-apocalyptic films.
All of them.
I do.
Except
it's true.
Eventually they'll make a post-apocalyptic film that's just about a bunch of people that just
sit around
and stare at the stars, and that's the whole thing. No one can do anything because, gosh, isn't the sky beautiful? And you'll be like, yawn.
Yeah. We mean like starfish?
Don't even. But you would thoroughly recommend this one?
I would recommend it. If you're into post-apocalyptic films, I would say this one's, this is a solid. It's more of a family drama than it is a post-apocalyptic film, but there are some moments, especially particularly including chainsaws, that were just hilarious and fantastic. And it's moments like those that, you know, the gory moments that I like so much that I just like gleefully laugh. Oh, yeah, look at him. He's beheaded.
Only patients would go, oh, there are these wonderful moments of laughter and joy involving chainsaws.
It's true.
So that's the end of our day 2 podcast. We will be back tomorrow, as always, with another Fantastic Fest look at the best and brightest of the films to check out this year at the world's best genre movie festival, Fantastic Fest. Please check us out at oneofus.net and at theaustinchronicle.com. And you can, of course, pick up copies of The Austin Chronicle all over town. Please do. They are our favorite local weekly periodical.